Yesterday, we stopped at the story of sauna. Now, you all know that these five faculties should be balanced. And when one of them is strong, that is, when one of them is stronger than the others, then the others cannot perform their respective functions. So when there is too much saddha of faith, the other faculties cannot perform their respective functions, and that was shown by the story of Wakali. Now, when the energy faculty is strong, that means stronger than the other faculties, then the other faculties, beginning with faith or confidence, cannot perform their respective functions. And in this case, the commentary pointed out to us the story of Sona Thera, the elder Sona. Sona was a man from the city of Champa, and it is said that his body was so delicate that he had hairs on the soles of his feet. One day he was invited to Rajagaha by King Bimbisara. And after talking with him, King Bimbisara sent him along with many families to the Buddha to listen to the Dhamma talk of the Buddha. After listening to the Dhamma talk of the Buddha, Sona came to the conclusion that it would be very difficult for him to practice the Dhamma to the full extent taught by the Buddha if he remained a householder. So he decided to become a monk. He decided to join the order. So he requested ordination from the Buddha, and he was duly ordained. So after his ordination, he went to a place near the city of Rajagaha and practiced meditation there. When he practiced meditation, he make much effort, actually too much effort. Now, he practiced meditation walking up and down, and he walked up and down so vigorously that he had blisters on the soles of his feet, and then the place where he walked up and down was smeared with blood. But however much he made effort, he was unable to reach any attainment. So he got tired, and then he sat down maybe on a rock near the place where he walked, and then thought, "I am one of those who make effort, who are energetic, but yet I am not able to reach any attainment. What if I go back to lay life, enjoy the pleasures of lay life, and at the same time do meritorious deeds?" See, he was thinking that way. Now the Buddha knew his thoughts, so Buddha went to him and gave advice to him. So Buddha went to where this where Sona was and sat on a seat prepared for him. Now it is said that when monks practiced meditation during the time of the Buddha, they always had a seat ready in case Buddha might come to them and help them. So Buddha went to him and sat on the seat and then said to him, "Sona, why are you not thinking like this, that you are going to go back to lay life and so on?" He said, "Yes." Then Buddha said, "Sona, when you are a lay person, why are you not skilled in playing the lute or playing the harp?" He said, "Yes." Then Buddha asked him, "If the strings of the lute were too tight, can the lute have good sound? And can you play it easily?" He said, "No." "Then if the strings are too loose, can it have good sound? And can you play it easily?" He said, "No." "But when the strings are neither too tight nor too loose and well tuned, can you play it easily? And will it have good sound?" He said, "Yes." Then Buddha said, "Similarly, if energy is applied too strongly, it will lead to restlessness. And if energy is too lax, it will lead to lassitude. Therefore, Sona, keep your energy in balance with concentration. Penetrate to a balance of the spiritual faculties and therein seize your object." That is what Buddha said to Sona. Now, I want you to remember this statement by the Buddha, and it is on the sheet. So, advice given to Sona is that too much energy leads to restlessness or agitation, and too little energy leads to laziness. So, the practitioners of meditation should understand this and act according to this advice. So, if you make too much effort, you become agitated, you become restless, and you find you cannot concentrate. And if you make too little effort, you become lazy or you become sleepy, you may doze off, and so there can be no concentration. So Buddha said, keep your energy in balance with concentration. So energy and concentration must be balanced. Penetrate to a balance of the spiritual faculties. That means just try to have a balance of these faculties. Let them be balanced, all these five controlling faculties. And therein seize your object means just practice samatha meditation or vipassana meditation. So when you practice meditation, whether it is samatha or vipassana, these faculties should be balanced. Not one of them must be too strong so that the others cannot do their respective functions. So when we practice meditation, we must be reminded of this statement, so that we do not make too much effort, and at the same time, we do not make too little effort. And if we make too much effort, then we become agitated and we cannot concentrate. And so in that case, we have to reduce the effort or take it easy. Sometimes we want to achieve a great deal, or we are worried about not getting results, and so we make more effort than is needed, and the result is the opposite of what we want. We want to get concentration, we want to have a good practice, but the result is no concentration, no good practice. So in that case, you have to slow down and practice tranquility. So the elder Sona took the advice of the Buddha and he performed the balance of energy with concentration. And so he practiced, and before long he reached arahantship. We can add. We can add one more story. That is the story of the Venerable Ananda. Now you all know that the Venerable Ananda was the personal attendant of the Buddha for 25 years. And during the first 20 years, Buddha had no permanent attendant. But from the 26th year onward, the Venerable Ananda was appointed the permanent personal attendant of the Buddha. And at that time, the Venerable Ananda had become a Sotapanna. But he did not reach any further stages of enlightenment, although he was attending on the Buddha, although he was very close to the Buddha for 25 years, because he was occupied with how to keep the Buddha in good health and so on. And so he did not attain any higher stages of enlightenment during the life of the Buddha. After the death of the Buddha, the Venerable Mahakasapa decided to hold the first Buddhist council. And 500 monks were to participate in that council, and the Venerable Mahakasapa was to be the president of that council. So Venerable Mahakasapa selected 499 arhats to participate in the council, and he left one for Venerable Ananda. He was unable to select Venerable Ananda because he was not an arahant. And it is difficult for him not to select Venerable Ananda at all, because it was Venerable Ananda who had memorized all that were taught by the Buddha. So he just left it to the discretion of other monks. So later, all the other monks requested Venerable Mahakasapa to select Venerable Ananda to be present at the first Buddhist council, and so he was elected. But he was still a Sotapanna at that time. Okay. When the day for the council was drawing near, some monks said, referring to the Venerable Ananda, they said, "Among us, there is one monk who goes about putting out the smell of raw flesh." That means Ananda still had mental defilements, and so these mental defilements had a kind of smell. Smell of raw flesh. Now, Venerable Ananda knew that it was directed to him. So he was moved. So on the night before the council was to take place, he was practicing meditation. You can imagine how eager he would be to become an arahant, because tomorrow there is going to be the council, and he thought to himself that it is not proper for him to attend the council while he is a Sotapanna and not an arahant. So he practiced the whole night, walking up and down. But he made too much effort, so he couldn't achieve anything. So early morning, about dawn, he stopped. And then he thought to himself, I've been practicing meditation the whole night, but I could not make any progress. And Buddha had said that, Buddha once said, Ananda, you have a store of merit accumulated in the past, and so you will become an arahant quickly. So he remembered these words of the Buddha, and he said, Buddha's words are never wrong. So he reviewed his practice, and then he decided that I have made too much effort. So he must relax. So he went into the cottage, and then he washed his feet and went into the cottage and sat down on the couch. And then to relax, he tried to lie down on the couch. So his feet were off the floor, and his head had not reached the pillows. So at that awkward moment, he became an arahant. So in the commentaries it is said, in the dispensation of the Buddha, who is the monk who became an arahant while he is not sitting, not standing, not walking, and not lying down? Then we should say it is the Venerable Ananda. So he became, he reached arahantship only when he slowed down, only when he relaxed. So too much effort is as detrimental as too little effort. So next day, at the council, other monks had taken their seats, but Ananda's seat was still empty. So monks were asking, where is Ananda, where is Ananda? So at that time, he entered the assembly of monks, but he dived through the earth, and then he showed himself out of the earth at his seat, and took his seat there to let no other arahants that he had become an arahant too. So in general, these five faculties should be balanced. Sati, mindfulness, is different. It is said that there is no case where mindfulness is too strong. So mindfulness can never be too strong, and so a strong mindfulness is needed to equalize the other controlling factors. So when there is sati, a strong sati, standing like a guard, then the other faculties will do their functions, their respective functions properly, and so the meditation practice will be fruitful. But the commentary said that in particular, faith and wisdom should be balanced, and energy and concentration should be balanced. Now, a person who has too much faith and who is weak in wisdom will have faith in everything. He will have faith in the object that is not the right object for faith. He will be an easy prey to those who want to deceive him, because a person who is weak in wisdom and who is strong in faith will believe in anything. So that is why the faith should be balanced with understanding or wisdom. A person who is strong in wisdom and weak in faith tends to become crafty, tends to become hypocritic. Such a person is compared to a disease caused by the medicine itself. So the disease caused by the medicine cannot be cured. So in the same way, a person who is too wise, actually, who is too wise and who is weak in faith, tends to become crafty. Now, the sub-commentary explains to us in this way: if you are too wise, then you may distort things. Now, take for example dana, giving. So dana is defined in the books as the volition by which you give something. So when you give something, this mental state arises in the mind, and that mental state is called volition, or in Pali, chetana. So the properly defined dana means the chetana of volition, a volition that accompanies the consciousness when you make a donation. But a person who is too wise will say like this: since chetana is what we call dana, we can do dana without giving anything. We just need to have a chetana in our minds. We just need to have that the will to give in our minds, and then we will have done dana. So we don't need to give anything, but we can have dana by having chetana arise in our mind. So he may say such things. But actually that cannot be true, because without giving there can be no giving chetana. Only when you give does chetana arise in your mind, and so there can be no chetana without the act of giving. But he may argue like that, and he may lead people astray by telling, it's okay, you may not give anything, but you can have dana. So this is an example of a person who is too wise. When these two, faith and wisdom or understanding, are balanced, then a person will have faith only in the right object. So, first, faith and wisdom should be balanced. And this balance of faith and wisdom can be practiced even when you are not meditating. Now, when you follow a teaching, like teachings of the Buddha, you need to have the balance of faith and understanding of wisdom. Now, if you have too much understanding, you will just be criticizing this and that, and you will not come to the practice, and you may find fault with everything that you read or that you understand. So it is good to balance understanding with faith or confidence. So when you have faith or confidence in the Buddha and in his teachings, then you will not criticize much and you will practice. Now sometimes there are people who will say chanting and all these things, they are not really taught by the Buddha, and so they are not beneficial or something like that. They may want to say, and they do not do these things themselves, and so they are deprived of the benefits they would get from such performances or such practices. So everywhere these two should be balanced, neither too much faith nor too much understanding. When practicing meditation to faith and wisdom or understanding can become too much. Suppose you are practicing meditation and you begin to see the rising and falling. And when you see the rising and falling, you are very happy because you have not seen it before, and now you are seeing it for yourself. And so you have so much saddha at that time that you may want to bow down to the Buddha many times, or you may want to go to the Disha and tell him that you are very grateful to him, or you may want to relate this experience to your friends, and you may think that you can give a Dhamma talk right there. And so you are agitated, and you become restless, and you lose concentration. And also, understanding can be too much. Now you begin to see the rising and falling, and so you are pleased with the understanding of the rising and falling, and then you become agitated because you are happy, and then you want to take the other objects also and watch them so that you see the rising and falling of them, or something like playing with the object, and then you become agitated. So in such cases, mindfulness is very important. So when you have strong mindfulness, then it can protect faith from becoming too much or understanding from becoming too much. So the mindfulness can regulate these factors and keep them in their proper balance. Just as faith and understanding should be balanced, so also should effort and concentration should be balanced. When there is too much effort, as you know, you fall into agitation and you cannot concentrate. And if you have too much concentration, you fall into laziness. That means when you have good concentration, you tend to lose effort. You tend to make less effort. Now you can be mindful of the object easily, then your mind can be on the object easily. You tend to make less effort. So when the level of effort goes down and the concentration becomes stronger, then you tend to you tend to become sleepy, you tend to become lazy. So the effort and concentration should also be balanced. So when effort is balanced with concentration, then it will not let you fall into restlessness. And when concentration is balanced with effort, it will not let you fall into laziness. So we should take care that we do not have too much effort or too much concentration. Sometimes so you practice meditation and you are not tired and you have a good practice, good mindfulness and good concentration. But when concentration is good, you tend to doze off, or you tend to feel sleepy. So in that case, chances are you have too much concentration. So if you think you have too much concentration, you have to reduce it and at the same time step up effort by paying closer attention to the object, or by increasing the objects, the main objects of your meditation. So that means if you think you have too much effort and the energy is low, then you step up your energy by taking four or five things at a time, like touching, 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 sitting, touching, 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 sitting, and so on. So the practice of meditation is a very delicate one, and you have to know when effort is too much or the concentration is too much, and then act accordingly. So now we know that the five faculties should be balanced. But there are some special statements mentioned in the commentaries, and that is, for a person who practices samatha meditation, faith, although strong, is permissible. That means if he has much faith, a person who practices samatha meditation, if he has much faith, it is good for him. It is permissible, because having faith, he will reach absorption, or he will reach jhana. So that means he will not be thinking, how can it be possible to attain jhana just by reflecting on the earth disk, saying earth, 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 earth. But he thinks that, oh, it was taught by the Buddha, and what the Buddha taught must be correct. And so with faith in the Buddha, he makes effort and he will reach absorption, or he will reach jhana. So for a person who practices samatha meditation, a strong faith is permissible. Another statement is about concentration and understanding. Now, normally, concentration and effort should be balanced. But what about between concentration and understanding? Now, it is said that for a person who practices samatha meditation, concentration, if strong, is permissible. So for a person who practices samatha meditation, strong concentration is permissible. It is okay if he has strong concentration, because by strong concentration he will reach absorption. That means he will reach jhana. Because when you practice samatha meditation, you need strong concentration. Only strong concentration will lead to the attainment of jhanas. So for a person who practices samatha meditation, a strong concentration is okay. And for a person who practices vipassana, understanding if strong is permissible. That means if he has strong understanding, it is all right. Because by strong understanding, by strong wisdom, he reaches penetration of the characteristics. Because vipassana, actually, the word vipassana is a synonym for panya or understanding. So when you practice vipassana, panya or understanding is important. When it is strong, it is good. Because only by strong panya can you penetrate into the three characteristics of all conditioned phenomena. So for a person who practices vipassana, a strong panya, a strong understanding, that means a stronger understanding, is permissible. Now, what about sati or mindfulness? Mindfulness should be strong in every case. Because when mindfulness is strong, it can protect the mind from falling into restlessness through the influence of faith, energy, and wisdom. Now, faith leads to agitation, energy leads to agitation, and wisdom or understanding leads to agitation. If they are not protected by strong mindfulness, the yogi will fall into restlessness. So sati is necessary, and it should be strong everywhere. And concentration can lead to lassitude. It can lead to laziness. That is, if it is not protected by mindfulness. So a strong mindfulness is needed to protect concentration from falling into laziness or lassitude. That is why it is said mindfulness should be strong everywhere. So sati is compared to salt in all dishes, and a minister who is clever in all affairs of the king. That means mindfulness is useful everywhere, and there is no occasion where mindfulness is too strong. So we have to have strong mindfulness to protect the mind from falling into restlessness and lassitude through the influence of the other faculties. So when we practice meditation, we must see to it that these five faculties are balanced, not one too much than the others. When they are balanced, they will be doing their own functions properly. So when each one of them is doing its own function properly, then this mechanism of meditation will go smoothly. Now it is like a machine, right? There are many parts in the machine, and every part has its function to do. They are put there not for nothing. But if one of the parts does not work properly, then the whole machine will not work. Just one clock or one part, one small part, when it does not work properly, then the whole machine will not work properly. So it is very important that every part in the machine must do its own function or must work properly. So in the same way, this mechanism of meditation is composed of five components, five parts, and these five parts must be doing their own function properly. They must be doing their function together and not in excess of others. So when these five faculties are regulated, then they will function properly and the meditation will be good. And these five factors are here called faculties. In Pali, they are called indriyas. So indriya mean governing. That means they have authority in their own field. Now they are like ministers. So ministers have power or authority in their respective ministries. So in the same way, faith or confidence has authority when it comes to having faith or resolving, and effort or energy exercise its authority when it comes to exciting and so on. Now, these five faculties are also called powers because they could stand firm against the opposition or against opposite factors. So sometimes they are called powers or strength. And some of them may also be found among the seven factors of enlightenment. I hope you know the seven factors of enlightenment. What are they? Mindfulness is one. Investigation of dhammas, that means understanding. And then effort, virya, right? Piti, and joy, and pasadi, tranquility. They are not here. And then, what else? Concentration. And then equanimity. So concentration is among the five faculties. Understanding is among the five faculties. Mindfulness is among the five faculties. Effort is among the five faculties. So these mental states are given different names in different groups. So here they are faculties. And in another group they are called power. And in yet another group they are called factors of enlightenment. And also, what about among the eight factors of the path and the Noble Eightfold Path? Is there effort in the Noble Eightfold Path? Yes. Mindfulness? Yes. Concentration? Yes. Wisdom? Yes. So they have different names, although they are one and the same mental state. So just as a man may be a house father at his house, but he may be a boss at the office. Or he may be a clerk and so on. And so one person can have different jobs or different how to call different works, and so here also one and the same factor can be called a faculty or a power or a factor of enlightenment or factor of path. Okay, let us go back to the passage we recite every morning. In the phrase ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, how many factors do you find? Ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful. Three. We find three. And the first one, ardent means energy or effort. And clearly comprehending means understanding, and mindful means mindfulness. And what did the sub-commentary say here? We must also understand samadhi, concentration, right? So by mindfulness, we must also understand concentration because they go together. So taking the concentration along with the other factors, we get four factors there, right? Effort, understanding, mindfulness, and concentration. But in the sequence of practice, we say effort, mindfulness, concentration, and understanding. Only faith is not mentioned there. But we may take all faith also, because without faith, without confidence, we will not practice at all. So we may say that by the phrase ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, Buddha showed us these five controlling faculties or five components of practice. And these five components must work together, and each of them must do its own function and not